Welcome to the Endurance Athlete Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Schamberg, and today with me from Ireland is Owen Everard. Owen, I hope I got that right.
And that's spot on. Thank you.
And this podcast, we talk with athletes, endurance athletes from a variety of sports. And today we're going to be talking, going back to my passion, which is strength training combined with running. And Owen is a perfect person to talk to about this. We're also going to talk about Pilates. We're going to talk about some products that he has for low back pain or back awareness. And we're going to talk about his book as well. Owen, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me. You know, I've been a big fan for a while. I would know Peter Francis, obviously, from being from Ireland, and stumbled across your page and really enjoyed that message of, as you said, someone who has a background in running, long distance running, but also sees the importance of strength training. Similar to myself, I would have a good background in running, and I try also like to do, as you said, Pilates and strength training. So I'm just going to move into here because
no problem. What is your background in sports? You're a runner, right?
Yeah. So in my area, I'm the still the only guy, but the first guy to break the 4 minute mile. So would have started as a kind of 800 meter runner, like 1:48, and then moved to the like 1500 meters, would have ran 3:39, would have competed for Ireland. You know, it's interesting. I would have been very good as a junior, as a young guy under 20, would have had a few years where I probably put too much pressure on myself and I was training hard, but just things weren't clicking. And then I did athletic therapy first. Difficult for an Irishman to say. And then went and did my master's in physiotherapy when running, I thought was going to wind down. And I think I actually started running my best in my late 20s and into my 30s. And I represented Ireland then from 800 to 10,000 cross country. I ran this year sub 8 minutes for, I ran 7:57 for 3K and I ran 13:58 for 5K, which I was happy with considering there was only like two races to do that in. So hoping to bring those times down and, you know, go maybe sub 30 minutes for 10K. And then I'd have nice odd numbers for all my PBs.
No, a sub 14 minute 5K, you know, 3.1 miles is pretty fast. I think my right now, if you put a gun to my head, I could probably do 20. Am I in my best?
Not bad. Once you get sub 20, especially if you're like the endurance side of things. So it's kind of more the shorter things that, because exactly. I have friends, I do longer runs, but you know, I'm not great at that. And it's just funny, some things suit people's bodies more, don't they? Because I can run, you know, like that, say 2:47 per kilometer, you know, like sub 4:30 for 3 miles, as you say. But if we do endurance long runs, I start getting really tight and sore. So it's interesting. Like,
I don't warm up until five miles into a run. So do anything less than that to me.
It's funny, isn't it?
It's challenging.
Like what suits people.
Now, one of the things, you know, I first noticed when we started talking and scheduling this is you're big on sports Pilates.
And strength training. I actually think what people have to look at is with running, which is great. There's two ways about this. Let's see if this makes sense, Dan. I'll say this the first thing. It's like, if you look at the injuries that runners get, you can go through them. Plantar fasciitis, Achilles tendonitis, like knee pain, like hip pain. If it's a hamstring, it's never like a hamstring pull or a tear. It's like spasm in the hamstring. There is a common thread between nearly every, if you compare that then to like, say, field sports, where people are actually tearing muscles, there's a common thread runs through that. And that's the case that they're all passive. And what that means is that they're overload issues. Why that occurs is that although we're running is really good for cardiovascular endurance, for your heart, your lungs, but it's not brilliant for actually really activating muscles. So I found as I was getting older, I had a bad hip problem. I couldn't really get to the bottom of it. So, had to rehab for a while, and I got very into Pilates then and doing extra strength work. And I found that actually, like, strengthening the muscles, activating the muscles, allows then the muscles to be much more engaged. Because when I was just running all the time, muscles can get very lazy because they can just rely on the joints to get you through. And that's fine when you're younger. But as I got into my late 20s and 30s, having something like Pilates or a little bit of strength training, you don't need to do loads of this, but it just allows you to activate the muscles again, which takes pressure off the tendons and the joints, and has allowed me to kind of run well into my, like, say I'm 35 now. So that's kind of how I got into it, just as something to kind of keep my form and keep me injury free so I can get the most out of my running.
And that's the first point that I'm going to make and or reiterate about strength training, is the two main goals from my perspective with strength training, whether it's, because I consider Pilates a form of strength training.
That's exactly it. Yeah.
And so if you, I'm not going to do Pilates because I picture just women wearing, you know, spandex and on a machine, and it's Pilates, and then we're going to have lattes afterwards. Like, it's a form of strength training, whatever you call it. And before we started recording here, we both were talking about how the importance of strength training is for runners. And my point was, the two things that strength training is important for is, one, injury prevention and recovery. And then the second thing is, it actually does enhance performance when done correctly. So
because if you think about it, right, there's three things. There's two points I'll say to that very quickly. I'll say the first one, because it's just as you're saying on performance. There's three things that make you a good runner. First is, like, your VO2 max. So, like, how much oxygen you can use. Now, again, that's kind of limited, or isn't a massive indicator once you go from kind of elite to sub-elite. The second one, which is important, is, like, lactic threshold. So if you're able to run, say, an endurance event or a marathon and keep the amount of the burn rate of your fuel lower because you're able to be more efficient, that's going to make you a better runner. And that starts from, like, say 5K, even 1500, all the way up to, like, ultramarathons. Obviously ultramarathons, feeding and stuff like that is so much more important. But the last one then, as you're saying, is hitting on, is running economy. You could have the smoothest car, runs on very low gas, but if the wheels and the tires are flat, that is going to be burning excessive oil. And I would have seen that when I look back, sometimes my form, feet turning in, you're just losing so much energy. So by doing strength training, not only does it prevent injuries, but it also stops you. It also enhances your form because you get used to holding your core in a good position. You hit the ground. And there's a lot of studies to show that strength training improves running economy, which in turn is one of the three drivers of performance.
No, we can now go on a whole 2-hour tangent on VO2, lactic threshold, velocity at VO2 max. These are all things I'm actually in the process of writing up YouTube videos that we'll be making here in the next couple of weeks. So, I mean, I love that, you know, to talk about that stuff, and that, yeah, kind of, we can definitely go on a tangent on that. And those are very important parts of running. You're right. Your VO2 max, which you can only train 5 to 10%, maybe a little bit more naturally, but the things that you're really, an untrained person will benefit more from VO2 max training than a trained athlete like you. You're not going to get as much benefit from VO2 max as somebody who doesn't run, or who's not athletic, or who's on the couch most of the time. So you can't really affect VO2 max unless you're untrained, but the things you then focus on are running economy, the training zones, your lactic threshold, being able to hold a higher percentage of your maximum output for longer. That's what, as the more trained you get, the more you focus is on being able to sustain your VO2 max, and strength training plays a huge part of that. And going back to the Pilates and the sports Pilates, how did you come across Pilates specifically rather than just strength training for injury prevention?
I would have done a lot of strength training when I was younger. And obviously my background is a physical therapist, or we're called chartered physiotherapists over here. So I would have had a background in, like, rehabilitation and a lot on back rehabilitation. So it was just kind of a natural fit. I would have done some courses in it, but I do a kind of sports Pilates, which essentially, as you're saying, there is basically a hybrid between body weight, strength training exercises, a lot on your feet, and then some more ground-based stuff. So it's not very, it's not like traditional Pilates. It's kind of it's really a hybrid. We do a lot of stuff on our feet. We try to get engaged the muscles and the core on the ground in simpler positions, and then use that engagement in our feet to replicate, you know, the positions that we're going to need for running. So that's kind of, I suppose, just my background as a physical or physiotherapist here, getting into it that way. And then also just seeing the need for body weight or weight training and just combining the two of those.
Now, a lot of times over here, people think about Pilates as on a reformer.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then the point I want to make about that, and you can let me know what you think, is, doesn't matter if it's body weight or on a reformer, it's all about moving your body more effectively.
Yeah, better control.
And having more control of that. So it focuses on a lot on less of the stretching that you get with things like yoga, but more about movement with your body. Is that right?
100%. I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions I have. Like my Pilates is really tough, like really tough. And like people are like, oh, it's like stretching or it's like yoga. It's like, it's not like that at all. It's about, like, as I said at the start, the people who do the course, similar to people you probably see, they're running, they're primarily like runners, triathletes, marathon runners. They do this once a week, and it's about, like I say to them, you know, you're sitting maybe 8-10 hours a day. It's going to take more than a few stretches to get your hips back firing the way they should. It's not, I did 30 seconds I do this like little glute stretch, am I ready to roll? It's like, no, like, because the first time people can be shocked, like we're really trying to activate the glutes, or we're standing, we're doing like single leg deadlift, or I saw on your Instagram is great, like, you know, a split squat, and really hold it, because we have to, like, these muscles get lazy. These are bums. We get used to, you know, we get so efficient with like our lungs and our heart. And what we need to do is, like, you need to really, really, really wake these things up. And strength training is brilliant for that. And if you're going to do Pilates like we do, we really need to, like, increase the amount of repetitions it's all about neural firing. It's about waking these muscles up so that when you're running, they're more, because they're now kind of woken up, quote unquote, they're more likely to activate and take pressure off passive, like, ligaments, tendons, or the joints, which generally get overloaded and we get injuries in.
I agree completely with you. And one of the things, going back to, before I forget about this, you're talking about how running is very passive. You're just doing one thing over and over again compared to field sports. And I think, and this is something that when I spoke with Dr. Peter Francis, that he reiterated, and I knew about, I just don't think about on a daily basis necessarily, is variability is very important. And that comes not just from changing of directions, but also includes other things that supplement running. So when you're not running, what can you do to help improve your running? And one of those things is strength training, Pilates, being able to move your body more efficiently.
Yeah.
And it's very important now.
And the post you had on that was great. I think picking that part out of your interview, which I thought was excellent, is so important. Like that, you know, doing hill training or doing a few sprints, it just changes the range of motion. And obviously, you know, you're the Endurance Athlete podcast. People can think, oh yeah, but I do longer stuff. It's like, no, it's not. This is nearly like improving your form, improving your mechanics, but also then injury prevention. And it's the same. It's like, there's, you know, the Pareto principle, right? Like, you can't, once something is very good, it's very hard to improve that thing. Mm-hmm. But I used to always say to guys that, like instead of trying to improve one thing by 5%, try and improve five things by 1% is very easy. You know, a lot of runners are not strong. It's easy to improve that by 1%. Like, so quickly with very little effort, as opposed to get like even more efficient over a longer distance. Where if you were like, running economy is better, that's going to like manifest to much better running long term than just doing the same thing over and over again and expecting to get incrementally better. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, adding strength training doesn't mean you have to completely give up running. It's just an adding, no. Like you said, it's adding one thing that you can get 1% better at to improve.
Yeah, and like I do definitely, like what I loved about your stuff is, and we kind of mentioned this beforehand, was it's the balance, right? You have some strength trainers and strength conditioning specialists, and they're like, you don't need cardio, like the gym is all you're doing. And then you have people who run, and they're like, oh, all you need to do is running. That'll be enough. You're not going to lift, you know, you're not lifting weights out there. It's like, it's a little bit of balance, you know.
Balance is key.
Balance is key. Like one time a week, maybe twice a week, you're going to get better at running by running. But eventually there is a plateau, and to stay running efficiently and to get the performance, you need to supplement that with a couple of extra things.
Oh, completely agree. Now, with your sports Pilates, and we'll kind of talk a little bit more about that and then go to some other topics, but who would you say that it's for?
That is for generally people who run. We have loads of triathletes do it. We have a lot of runners who do it. It's for the person who, I'd invented that as well because I would have seen a lot of, from the physiotherapy clinic, seeing people who were injured, got them back running, and then they just stopped doing rehab because they just don't want to do it. So by having a course like this, you have to do it once a week. You post up when you've done it. We check your names. If you haven't done it, we send you an email on Saturday, because I'll always go for a run. Like I'll always, you know, like no matter what happened, if I hadn't ran, I've ran today, but if I hadn't, I'd definitely put on my shoes and go for a run. I wouldn't do the same with like Pilates or strength training. So it's for the people who don't want to be in the gym, but know that it's important to do this type of work. And then they're kind of just, they do our course. Like some people do it loads, but everybody has to do it at least once. And we've had people, I've been doing sports Pilates for over 4 years with a kind of very good group, because they see the benefits of it. That it just keeps their bodies healthy and they're moving correctly. And then they can enjoy their training, but consistent training then allows for much better performance.
Now, if somebody wants to get more into the sports Pilates, how would they go about doing that?
Oh yeah, brilliant. Yeah, see, it wasn't. So if you go to Everard, which is EVEORARD, we say or weird. That's like rabbit. I don't know if I'm saying like, so my name.
EVEARARD.
ARD, Pilates.com. Yeah. You click on there, you'll see there's a sports Pilates. And if they click in sports Pilates, we have free trials. So you can try it out for a week, see the type of exercises we do. You know, even if you then want to drop out, no problem. At least you'd kind of have an idea of like, these are kind of some of the key exercises I'll do. And again, it's like 45 minutes. And it would be good for people to do at least once, because they get an idea of like, this is what you need. Don't listen to anybody saying, oh yeah, I stretch for 3 minutes. There's not much evidence behind that. There's evidence behind really turning these muscles on. Do you know, like giving a stretch after you've sat for 8 hours is not going to cut it. They're like literally sometimes call it glute amnesia. They forget how to switch on. The core gets lazy. So it is really, it's a beginner program we start with. So we teach you the basics, but it's not a cakewalk by any means. You'll definitely know you've had a good workout.
People definitely ask me all the time if they should stretch before they run. And my go-to answer is no. And I like to compare it to pulling a piece of frozen steak out of the freezer, right?
Yeah.
Is that steak, can you bend it? Can it move? No, it's frozen solid. That's what happens when you're not moving. Your muscles are cold.
And yes, in order exactly. for them
to have that elasticity, to be able to move, contract, relax, and stretch, you have to have it warm, right? So that's what warm-ups are for, mobility exercises. So before you exercise, you run, do activity, get the muscles warm. You can do mobility exercises, because it's more important for range of motion around a joint, in my opinion,
100%,
than it is for focusing on stretching. And so if you can do Pilates or something, even before you run for 15, 20 minutes, great.
Yeah, exactly. Or like you, sometimes people always ask me, well, when's the best time to do it? It's like, when can you do it? Because sometimes we give ourselves like excuses in terms of like, well, I asked the best time, I don't have time with that. It's like, whenever you can do it, that's the best time. Do you know? So if before a run, you can do like, say, some strength exercises or some Pilates and then go for your run. Or a lot of ours, they just want like a dedicated time. Like we have little 20 minute routines you can do also. But if you want just like, okay, I'll get this done on my rest day on a Friday morning and then it's done for the week. Do you know? So it's just what you can do whenever.
No, I completely agree. Whenever you can do it is the best time to do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And before we move on to some other topics, and it could be either Pilates based or strength training based, what are your favorite, let's say like two or maybe three favorite strengthening exercises for, definitely, for runners?
Definitely. My favorite one is the single leg deadlift, where you stand on one leg, you bring the leg back and you hold that position. I keep a slight bend in the knee because you never run with a locked out knee. So I like to kind of get used to that. If anyone has like Achilles problems, calf issues, hamstring, I find that one excellent. I find that really, really good.
And I would call that here a single leg Romanian deadlift or single leg
Romanian deadlift. Yeah. Yeah.
So if you're looking up that exercise, either for me or with Owen's page or on YouTube, whatever, a single leg RDL or single leg deadlift is great exercise.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially I find that sometimes, okay, there is research about like from Aronson up in Scandinavia about like if people have had Achilles problems to always do like heel drops, heel raises. But like the difference between acute and chronic there has to be recognized. If you've had just like tightness or your Achilles is a little bit sore, a lot of times, again, and especially for your endurance athlete, the range of motion is so small, they don't really lift through their knees. Like you're talking about trying to get that joints moving more. So really the calf is overloaded. So then doing like heel drops, heel raises, it's like, okay, you're strengthening a thing that is already overloaded. That's not the issue. The issue is get your hamstring and your glute working more, improve the balance and take pressure off the calf. And that fixes so many more issues. So many more issues than like just trying to, again, target the area. You know, you see the same one with knee pain and people are like, oh, I need to squat and lunge more. Again, the knee is overloaded. The ankle and the hip are probably not moving effectively. The
glutes are weak.
Fix those. Like, you know, it's like, you know, it's some stuff out there is just so basic. It's unbelievable.
The thing though is, and this is a very important point to bring up, is people don't know that like your typical runner's knee in the past. And I do say the knowledge base is getting out there more and more, but when somebody says their knee hurts, and I see it in the gym all that, I can't do these exercises. Yeah. You can't do these exercises right now.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
The issue is it's generally not the knee that's causing the problem. That's where your symptom is. So, but people don't realize that people don't have a background in physiology or biomechanics. So they don't realize that the glutes, hamstrings the hips play a huge role in how we move. And if those are weak, then the places like the quads and the calves have to take over. And that's where you're going to get problems.
100%. I couldn't agree with that more.
And just another quick anecdote for me is when I started doing ultra marathons in 2014, part of that, I would run 20 miles a week, maybe consistently. And I would do a lot of strength training. But as I got more and more into ultra marathons and more mileage and more time running, the thing that suffered is my strength training.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And as a strength and conditioning coach, I understand that. But like you said, if I have a choice, I'm going to go out for a run. And I'll put the strength on the back burner, and it's easy to do. And my calves started to get overworked. My calves are consistently sore. Yes. And over years, I just kept neglecting the strength training. And so this past year, especially now within the last 6 months, I've refocused on adding strength training, single leg training, hip strengthening.
Yes. Yeah.
To my program. And it's made such a huge difference. And so it's something that you've got to be constantly aware of.
100%. And like, you'll get away because you probably had a very good base initially. you'll get away with that. And you can take a period, you know, so for someone, like I'll take like maybe a month off Pilates or a month off strength training in the competition phase, or do stuff very light, like 60%. Apparently you can get away with 60% volume for like 2 months, I think, without any real drops. But that's what you find, like that's what I would have had, where you would have done it, got out of the habit, fine for ages, and then little niggles start coming, don't add it, and then it becomes bigger problems. So yeah, that's exactly it. I think it's, as you ask more, the Greeks had a great thing, right? They have three types of exercise that you need, and it's restorative, which would be like kind of Pilates, yoga, foam rolling. Martial is the ability to defend or attack. So that's like basic strength. And then pedagogy is like games or general fitness that we'd have. And we've really skewed towards fitness or games and not have the other two in balance. And I think if you always have those things, do I feel strong as a human? Can I move in a controlled way through all my joints? And then that will allow me. And I find, like, as I said, I've ran a sub 4 minute mile and sub 14 for 5K. I run my best when I'm feeling healthy. It's very rare I run my best whereas like I feel like really tight or not great, but I've just really focused on training. I feel like I run my best when I feel like I could be strong enough to lift something, and I feel like I'd be supple enough. And then I hone in on my training and I get very specific, and then that allows me to peak.
No, I think that's great. And so now moving on a little bit, because there's a couple of things I want to get to here, is that kind of transitions into, you've got a book out called Get to the Line in the Best Shape Possible, where I think you put a lot of all these different components in one place for people.
Yeah. So I write a lot of articles for like the local paper here, and you know, you're just like doing them week on week. So I would have had, a lot of articles on, generally, I think it's like health and fitness, supplementary training, like sleep, nutrition, things like that. And then also on like training practices that I would subscribe to. So like you said, they're like, you know, five zones of training, like, you know, the importance of, because a lot of people just do the same pace the whole time. And again, it gets back to what Peter was talking about with that variability. Plus you need to stimulate your body in different ways. Like what is tempo running? What is interval running? Some of them are basic enough articles. Some of them are quite high end. So it's just a collection of articles. It's no Booker Prize winner or anything, but it I think it just gives people a nice general understanding of like where they could start, how they can like set their lifestyle up, like with good sleep habits, good nutrition habits, how to recover from races, how to prepare and taper. So I just came up with that as a kind of like just a collection of all the articles.
No, I think I just got it emailed to me, so I'm excited to actually later on, because, you know, I could talk about strength all day. It's what I love, but I love having perspectives from outside my comfort zone.
And yeah, I know you're a great
coach. I have to always be learning. I have to always then also be studying again, relearning things that I've forgotten, and to have work that other people put out there that are simple enough for not only me to understand, but for the layman, as we would say, to understand is great value for people.
Well, I always find that like, and the articles I've written are simple, but I love that Einstein quote that if you can't explain something simply, you don't know it well enough. And I always find, you know yourself, Dan, like even just chatting to you, two things I really like about you straight away is that, like, you know someone who's confident in their own ability when they're willing to like engage and share ideas, and it's not just, oh, I'll say what I want or hide away from these things. You know what you're doing, and then you're just like able to link in and highlight it to different your audience, which is fantastic, you know, and be willing to learn different things because you have that base knowledge, which is great. And then, as you said, not overly confuse things. There's two types of people. I think there's ones who kind of get it, like get it and then try to just explain things simply so others can get it. And then there's other people who try to be a guru and like make it overly complex. Because me and you could have a conversation now based on physiology and biomechanics, and everybody would be like, oh wow, like, you know, as you said, like
they would have turned off then.
Yeah, but velocity VO2 training, or like we could like go into real detail on freaking mitochondria or whatever, and people are like, oh yeah, they really know their stuff, but actually not have a clue of what to do. So I think it's
but just how does that help people? And that's
how does it help people and just make things simple?
That's the problem I run into with trying to make posts and videos to share information, and is you want to show that you have the knowledge, but you want to be able to communicate in a way that a fifth grader can understand.
Yeah, and you have to risk sometimes not looking like, do you know, like I obviously, you know, I have a PhD in biomechanics and all, but again, I try, even for students, if I'm teaching them, I try to keep things very simple and then layer on top of that, as opposed to come in, make it overly complex and nobody really knows what you're talking about.
Yeah, strength training should be simple for people. Your running program should be simple. You don't need to make it the most complicated program because it's based on the best research and you've got all these great acronyms and now you're doing these very complicated workouts. The body adapts to stress. So if you can stress particular variables that will allow you to improve, that's all you need. It does not have to be complicated. Running, strength training, mobility, it's simple is better. And if you see most of my workouts I give people, they're simple. I would rather do 3 to 5 exercises really well than have a workout that does 15 exercises.
Well, that's like with strength training or with anything, I always find that is a telltale. If people are using a lot of gimmicks, a lot of different exercises, equipment, it screams to me, like the way you were able to say, like a single leg deadlift or Romanian deadlift. It's like, it's simple, but to execute that correctly requires good technique, and learn how to do that correctly. That's going to give you the most bang for your buck. We could bring in loads of BOSU balls and different things. You don't know what you're looking for enough. Now there's exercises you can do with that are good, but it's I would be the exact same, like really get good at the basics and know why you're doing it and you're going to be fine.
Yeah, start with body weight, right? Start with Pilates style moves, because if you can't control your body by itself, how are you going to be able to control kettlebells, dumbbells, barbells, right? When you add excess load to your body, if you can't control your body without any external resistance.
100%. Albert Mayall has a little triangle. It's like a hierarchy. So you should have like good movement. You should have good technique first.
Yes.
Then you should have what's called work capacity. So you should be able to like lift like 3x10 or 3x12 of like circuit type training, because that's what's going to make your body robust and strong. And then like
that. Yes, because people go into the gym expecting to do a lot, but they can't. You haven't developed that work capacity.
Yeah, and you need to develop that, and then start developing like maximum strength. Like again, like don't go to 100%, but like 90%. Just get really good at lifting that like strongly. Then get plyometrics. Then you can work on like the speed of the action. But as you said, you can get people who are jumping, loading, and don't know that this is the kind of order I need to follow.
Yeah. One of the things about that though, is it starts off with testing. If I'm not sure, it's Vermeil's principle of athletic performance. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so simply it goes over is when you start, you want to be able to do fitness testing or testing to see where, if you have deficiencies. Then you do, like you said, work capacity, which is lighter weight, more repetitions, getting used to doing an amount of work for a period of time. Then you work on strength training. Then you work on explosiveness, and then you develop speed. And I think the part that people often miss and that you added is mobility is important. So before you do your work capacity, it's important to be able to move your body correctly. And I think that's a great component and kind of what we're talking about here, being able to do these body weight Pilates exercises, being able to learn how to move your body first, so that way you can avoid these injuries and that you can improve your performance.
That's it. Cause otherwise you're just building like fitness on dysfunction. There's no point getting stronger, but like doing it in a way that's going to harm you long-term.
Great. And before we move on to a couple other topics, how can people get a copy of this book? I just got an email to me earlier, so I'm looking forward to checking it out. Gosh. And I think it's on your website, Everard
EverardoPilates.com. And I think it's a book.
And I think you go to the website, you click on the free ebook or free book.
Yeah. If you look, if you just go into EverardPilates.com. So that's, again, E-V-E-R-A-R-D, Pilates.com/book. And you'll get a free copy of it there. You get an e-copy.
Great. I think that's a great tool to have for people. Again, these are also things that I'm working on my back end. And like you're saying before, you've got a product that you're launching and you were doing financials for that. And so this chat here is a break from that.
To do this because I was losing the will to live.
So one of the areas that I see runners do that have problems with is, and when you do strength training, one of the main areas where people lack is core and or spinal stability.
Yeah.
And you've done a lot of posts and writing about posture and back. And you've also now you've created a tool called the Back Aware Belt. Tell me about all of that.
Yeah. Well, as you said, my background was in biomechanics and just as a physio, it would be frustrating. You want people to be moving correctly. Even like people doing strength training or Pilates, they're trying to keep their bodies healthy. But when you saw them do the exercises, they're just doing them totally wrong. And there's generally three reasons for that. The first was like, it could be a mobility issue that they're not moving well, like through their ankle or through their hip, so they can do mobility drills. And that would fix some people. And then secondly, it could be that they're just not activating or able to switch on the muscles in basic positions, as we said. But a lot of times it was like, they didn't have an awareness of their back position. So like when I'm looking at them, I'm like, you know, seeing them curve their back, I'm like, no, that's not right. And they're like, oh, you know, they're trying to look in a mirror, or it's like putting my fingers in their back to do it. So I've had this idea for like probably 10 years of like, it'd be great if there was like something out there that gave people like feedback so they knew when they were into a bad position, because at least then they wouldn't harm themselves. And over time, you're getting that feedback that you'll be able to improve. So that's how the idea was born. I didn't do anything with it for about 6 years. And then I just decided, in fairness, our local enterprise office here were really good. They gave me like, they said, look, if you can develop this, we'll give you 50% of the money back. I was like, you know what? This is time now. I have a code of incentive. So I just went into it, started contacting a lot of engineers. It's taken like 3 years to develop. But finally we have a product that gives you instant feedback on your back position. You can see it on the app so that people can finally see their back position, and the belt vibrates as well. So if you move into a poor position, so as you're squatting, you don't keep that spine in that correct alignment, you come out of position or you arch excessively, it's going to buzz and you're going to see it on the screen as well. You can use it as well for like planks or press-ups or bridges. Again, like people would like arch their back, use their back muscles rather than using their core muscles. So again, this helps you, once you find the middle, to stay in that position. And we've got great results so far of like showing people how, you know, they can really very quickly get an awareness of, all right, this is how I should be moving, which is
great. You don't have to. So this is a belt that you would wear around your waist. And because I was watching the videos on this and I really liked it because it's not a weight belt, which you would think of in the gym, that's going to lock your back into place, which those things I'm not a big fan of, unless you're sort of an elite power lifter. I get it. But for the general population, wearing a weight belt is actually more detrimental than anything, but
100% it switches off the core muscles.
Exactly. So this is just, it's a device you wear that will basically gives you feedback about when you're out of position.
That's exactly it. And honestly, now it looks like a little bit like a back belt. And I spent over a year looking at a way to make it not look like a back belt, because I did not want people to think this was something that is like a power lifter belt that will just take all the weight. This is you learning how to use your own muscles to hold that. So you're working your core more probably than if you didn't have this belt on, as opposed to less, because you have a supportive belt. This isn't supportive. As you said, this is a biofeedback tool that allows you to know to have the confidence that you're in the right position.
Oh, that's great. And it, so it hasn't come out yet, right? You're still in the Kickstarter design phase?
Just launched on Kickstarter. So it's just in the, hopefully we've done like beta tests and stuff like that. So I have about 50 units and we're getting in another 50 and we're then producing more for like January and February.
Oh, great. That's something actually I would like to try because...
Yeah, I'll try to send you one actually.
Yeah, when I have a lot of times when I work with clients doing like everything you said, planks, push-ups, squatting, and when I'm standing next to them and I can say things like tighten your core, lift your chest up, stick your butt out, or, you know, doing a light touch on the muscle to give them the feedback, they'll get into form. But if I walk away or if they're doing it on their own, they will go back to those positions or incorrect positions because they don't have the proprioception.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. Or you see them the next week.
Correct form.
That's it. You see them the next week and it's like, oh my God, you've been doing this wrong for like a week. Do you know? So that's exactly why I came up with it, seeing people like this. And it's like, if I could let you see or feel what I see, there would just be no issue. Like, okay, will you be perfect at it straight away? No, but you won't reinforce a poor pattern. You will constantly just go buzz. Okay, it can be frustrating, but when you pretty quickly, we're finding that people then are like learning how to like not just arch their back because they've done a plank poorly for literally 10 years. Like you're like, you have people, oh, I can hold the plank for 3-4 minutes. You get them and they just literally tilt their pelvis, arch their back, use their back muscles, and the core is just basically having a sleep while they think they're doing something great. And it's like, no, you may as well have been on a couch.
And this also could be, I think, used for not just exercises, but for just sitting posture when you're sitting
posture at your desk. Yeah.
Because I notice a lot of times, you know, I'm at the computer for a couple hours typing something up or writing programs out, and I realize, oh man, I'm hunched up. And so I have to force myself to sit up straight into a good posture, but I've been doing it for half an hour without even realizing it.
Yeah.
And so to have something.
And half an hour is not bad. Like usually we try to encourage like micro breaks, like little stands. They found with people with back pain, if you could stand for like 1 minute for every hour you sit, and the level of back pain didn't increase at all throughout the day compared to people who sat constantly, the back pain went like significantly worse. So the back wear belt we have, there's two functions, like gym mode and office mode. Office mode, you can say, listen, I don't mind if I'm in a poor position for 5-10 minutes. Whenever your back, before your back would hurt, I'd like it, and I'll just send a message to your phone. Or you can buzz. Have it that it stays vibrating, just in case you're in an office. You don't want, you know, your back buzzing underneath your shirt and people are like, what the hell is going on?
No, I think that's a great tool that I think a lot of people will benefit from.
Thanks very much, Dan. Yeah. I really worked hard on it and very proud of it. So it's just, and that's great to like be on a podcast like this and just try, you know, share these messages. And like, you know, that's why I really appreciate this, that, you know, as you said, you could like doing podcasts like this, trying to inform your listeners of the importance of good technique. And if the back aware belt is something that can help, I'd be delighted. If it's not, but just that's fine. But just to know that, like, try get the technique right before you start loading up.
It's all about technique, you know, and core strength is important for runners, even though they don't realize it. Like, why do I need to do planks? I'm running, I'm using my legs, I'm using my arms. But a lot of injuries come, especially the lower back, the hip flexors, come from not being able to, while you're running, whether it's flat, uphill, downhill, trails, being able to stabilize the pelvis and have it adapt and move, because the pelvis is never going to stay completely still when we run. It has to move in that order to allow us to adapt to the terrain or the variables that to our running. But to be able to keep your core in a stable position reduces injuries dramatically.
Dramatically, because you're not then putting like your hip or your hamstring, your hip flexors in compromised positions. And then that can overly stretch the whole posterior chain. It's like you can have people with calf issues. I'll send through a picture to you actually, just of me when I was younger compared to me now, just it just highlights why is core stability important, or why is it important to learn these things when you see form and you can kind of naturally grind through, but you are losing so much energy. I think that analogy of tires being fully pumped up or tires being flat should really kind of hit home for people, because it's like, that's the difference. It's like, if you aren't wasting, you want all your energy going forwards. And if it's going forwards, that's at least then you're getting the max out of whatever engine you have. If you are losing it left and right because your hip is dropping or your core is not keeping it solid, well then, you know, it's like having deflated tires.
I think it's a great analogy. I use the analogy of a car and your engine a lot, especially in relation to aerobic performance. And your car is, you, the size of your engine is your VO2 max. Your aerobic and anaerobic thresholds are the type of fuel that you use. You know, your RPMs is your lactate threshold. You know, do you burn fat and carbs? You know, that's like the oil or gas, or, and, you know, having like the tires as your core, your strength. So
that is excellent. Yeah. I love that you've taken it the whole way through. I just did the tires. That's actually brilliant.
I'll come up with something there. Get famous for that. But, well, so you gave me your favorite, one of your favorite strength exercises is the single leg deadlift or the single leg RDL. Yeah. What about core? What are one or two of your favorite core exercises that you think every runner especially should be doing, or any athlete?
Yeah, just simple ones. Like, I like a double leg glute bridge. Okay. Sometimes, again, nearly, and then really, really, really work that, especially if you have any hip problems, and anything around the pelvis, if you're unsure, keep it double leg. I like doing like crawling actions or starting. The thing that I will do to make sure that someone is ready to do a plank is I get them to kind of stick their bum in the air, then round their back. So they're kind of moving their pelvis up and back down. So they're kind of anterior and posterior, tilting their pelvis. So arching their back, lifting the back, and then see, can they find the middle? And when they find the middle, as you said, like lifting up the core, pushing gently out to the side. So we're kind of making an easy cylinder, just enough to hold that same position. Then you might do a plank or a bridge in, or a press up in that position. But like, if you go out to a full plank and you find that you can't move your pelvis at all, that's giving you a big indication that you don't have the actual core control to control that position. And you should probably, if it's full plank, move to your knees. If you can't do it from there, go to all fours. So your knees are directly underneath your hips, your hands are directly underneath your shoulders, and try and move your pelvis and then hold it in the middle as you lift your arm and your leg. So more than like one particular exercise, I think it's really important to be able to see where you're at and progress from there. Half kneeling lift is another one, actually, just if I was going to say one I really like. So you kneel and then you have your foot directly, like about 6 inches of a space from the heel to the knee, but the heel and knee are directly in line, and you try to stay upright in that position. And you'd be surprised, check your right and left there. That will generally catch like a core balance, because there's two elements to core. There is like improving the endurance of the muscles, which is like through like planks and holding them for longer, or crawling or bridging. But there's also the proprioceptive element to core, the ability to like switch on and switch off, or just keep things in balance. And you need to kind of work the two of those things in sync.
I think we'll have to get a video for that exercise and post it so people can see. So for some of these, and we'll see, we'll get that on that right away. And right, so core, and also don't think about core as just ab exercises. Core is being able to stabilize your spine and your hips. And so anything that I do that, so a single leg or a two-legged glute bridge is you're on your back, your feet are on the ground or on a bench for a more advanced person. And you lift your hips up, so that way there's a straight line between your knee, your through your hip into your shoulder. Is that what you're talking about? Just a glute bridge?
Yeah. And that would be on the endurance side. Like even like standing on a single leg, having like a light med ball, like a 2 kg med ball, or even just any kind of soccer ball if you wanted, finding the middle with your pelvis and holding that, keeping your knee in line with your foot, and then passing that ball off the wall 20 times and catching it, mm-hmm. turning to the side, hitting the ball off the wall, especially if you've had any ankle issues. That is core stability as well. You know, like, so there's two elements to core, as you said. There's increasing the endurance through doing planks, doing bridges, side planks. But there's also the core of being able to control your position as you try to move your arms and your legs. And it's important to work the both of those things.
I think that's great. And we could get into another hour of talking about strength training from the bottom up, which we have to do. I'm enjoying this conversation. So we've talked about, you know, sports Pilates is something that, even if you don't call it Pilates, just strength training, body weight for athletes. We've talked about your book about how to get to the line in the best shape possible, yeah. which puts a lot of your research that you've collected over the years in a readable form. We've talked about, you've got a lot going on here. The back aware belt, which I think is a great tool to help people improve their posture and their lower back.
And that stability. Awareness, as you said, because what we're talking about there is it's important to improve the endurance, but so often people just drop their pelvis and they're using their back muscles rather than their core, or they're not aware of that position when they're, say, squatting or whatever. So it just gives you that awareness and confidence to know you're in the right position. And if this isn't buzzing, you're okay. And if it is buzzing, start working on that position.
No, I think that's great, because a lot of times people think a lot of exercises are bad for your back. It's not that they're bad for your back. It's that your back is already in a bad position when you do it.
100%. 100%. Deadlift gets a massively bad name, but most people do it terribly. Do you know? But like, that's because if they were aware of, do not lift that bar if that belt is buzzing, because you're lifting this through your back.
Yeah.
You're not lifting this through your hips.
It's a great tool. And then, so I want to go back and kind of finish up here on more of some endurance type questions finish up here. And I want to go, you said your fastest mile is you're a sub four. You're the first one in Ireland to do that. Is that correct?
No, first one in Kilkenny. I think I was 39th in Ireland.
Okay. 39th in Ireland, but that's still a sub 4 minute mile is amazing. One program that I was in the process of writing and I was going to mention this on a next couple weeks on a podcast, is I'm putting together a 6-week run a faster mile program.
Perfect.
And it's simple. It's not complicated exercises, but the purpose of this is that people often focus on things like half marathon, marathon, ultra marathon, 5K, 10K, these endurance events, and anything over a minute is endurance based to different levels. But people often neglect running a faster mile.
Yeah.
You know, I 100%. Guess you could say a kilometer would be an equivalent, but, you know, a little bit longer than a kilometer is a mile. So I want to show people that you can run a faster mile without sprinting like Usain Bolt every day.
Exactly. Yeah.
Those are completely different sports. So going back to the mile, what tips do you have for people who want to run a faster mile?
So if you are an endurance
athlete, I'm going to include these on my program.
Yeah, perfect. If you are an endurance athlete, one, I would definitely do strides after my runs, like, you know, just like 3 or 4 hill sprints, or just like 15 seconds easy, just to get you used to it. Is this person now just going to do like 6 weeks of pure training to get better at running a mile? So essentially, like, they're not like trying to get their mile time better, but still get better at the half marathon.
Both. I want to show people in just as little as 6 weeks, with specific training program or specific workouts, you can improve your mile time. Yeah, whether you've never run a mile before or you've been running a mile and it won't ever get faster. So this will include hill sprints. There's a lot of hill sprint in there. There's some tempo runs. There's recovery runs. It's not working hard every single day. And I think that's
100%. It is not working hard. And it's not, it's not killing yourself either. I think
exactly.
Like, no, you'll be surprised how quickly you'll run if you run off like what you feel you could run a mile in. Sometimes we run off the targets and you can really fry yourself. Like, always, my old coach was, he always feel like you could do one more rep. And being fresher allows you to get so much more out of you. So like, especially when people think, as you said, oh, I better sprint because I'm doing a mile. The way I would look at it is this: if I was just doing pure 6 weeks of training, and like, so I have a good aerobic base because obviously you're coming from that, I would probably do two sessions per week. I would still do my long run. I might just do like 90 minutes because you could keep that the same if you wanted, but yeah, just not to overly stress. I would have one session at the pace or the distance that you're running. And then I would alternate. So like, examples of that would be, like 8x 400 meters off like 90 seconds to 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And then I would have one session where you might do some tempo. So what would be an example of a session? I would do like maybe 5 minutes or 10 minutes at tempo pace, like relax, not overly going. And then you might do 8x 200 at like, you know what I might do? I might go like, say 10 minutes of tempo, just as a, to keep the aerobic base in. Then I actually might even just do like some 3K specific work for like of 1500 meter worth of distance. So a 3K or 5K type of thing, like 3 or 4 by 600 meters at like predicted 5K pace. And again, don't take it that you ran your best ever 5K in the summer when you were peaked and that's the time you have to run from now on. Think about it, it's like, okay, if I was running a 5K literally tonight, what do I feel? So if I ran 13:58, on a normal day, I might think, okay, I'd run like a 14:20, 14:30. So just work out the pace off that or how you feel. And then might finish with like, as you said, like, you know, 6x30 seconds.
Yeah.
If people aren't used to the track though, as you said, doing kind of those similar things, but just think of a 200 as a 30 second sprint, think of a 600 as 90 seconds. And you won't be far off wrong.
That's exactly what I do with people is I'll put meters up there, but I'll say a 400 is the equivalent to about, 30 to 60 seconds.
Yeah.
You know, of work. I mean, or sorry, 200 is 30 to 60 seconds of work. But the idea is you don't have to follow a specific time or distance. It's all about effort.
That's right? Exactly it.
The duration of effort. And one program I like to do is 4 minute intervals because you're looking at VO2 max. And if you're doing new sprints, they're going to be a lot shorter, but it's all about maximum effort for a particular workout. So you don't necessarily need to worry about time or distance. You need to worry about how hard you're working to get the appropriate stress, which will cause the appropriate adaptation into the mile. So,
and the mile is very neural. So just be careful about that stimulus. Like one a week would be fine. Like you might sometimes we used to do mixed pace as well. If you're doing your two sessions, so like say 4x30 seconds off 200 in like your, maybe an eight slightly quicker than, 1500 meter pace, take 3 minutes of recovery. Then you might do a mile at like threshold pace. And then you might finish with like 5x400 at 1500 meter pace or 3K pace off a 200 meter easy jog.
Okay, great. Yeah, these are all some good tips that are kind of very similar to the program that I put into place. So what's your favorite workout? Let's go with that for a 1 mile. We'll finish with that. For 1 mile, if you're improving your 1 mile performance, what's your favorite workout? Now, again, it doesn't have to be the one you like the best. It could be the one you hate the most.
The one I hated the most was 4x600 meters. I hated that at race pace. That I always got sick after that.
Four by just a little over a quarter mile. So 4x4/4 mile.
4x over a quarter mile. I used to do 2x0.5 mile at your race pace, but with 7 minutes recovery. But that was a session. And then, but that was a session you would do like say 10 days out.
Yeah.
To nearly prove you're in shape.
Yeah, right. Because when you want to improve on running the mile, you actually have to practice running that. So one of the things we do is we have, all right, we're going to run a quarter mile at your goal pace. And then a couple weeks later, we're going to run half mile at your race pace, and gradually getting your body used to running at those pace. Cause a lot of it is mental too.
Do you know another session that we started doing more, like you could use this for a mile as well. Before we used to have very short recoveries, you know, kind of if we hitting that lactic, but I actually find that keeping someone's like, keep them doing like kind of higher end like lactic training work, like based off heart rate. So have one session of that per week, and you can add in like faster strides at the end as a one base one. But that's, so it's not taxing on the body. It's like, go out, stay in your zone, but it's an LT zone. It's that like higher end kind of 10K pace feel, like, you know, that kind of cardio CV pace. And then a second session, if you are trying to get like, say with 4 weeks left, getting used to running at that speed, do that with longer recovery. So we would do maybe like 3 or 4 by 600 meters, like a bit over a quarter mile at like 3K pace, but with a 200 meter, very easy jog. And then we would do 4 by 400 at 1500 meter pace with a 400 meter jog. Now, a 400 meter jog could take 3 minutes recovery. But the idea of that was, rather than really trying to like stress the body and getting the lactic up, it was just about like, okay, get used to running the pace relaxed. It's only something we've done in the last year or two. I didn't really do it as much.
So when you're not trying to create exhaustion.
Not trying to empty the tank. Usually they combine the two of those. But what I found, especially, I'm thinking like a lot of the people who are, you're targeting here are probably, they're not in like their early 20s to recover. And a lot of faster miles are done at that. So I think if you're hitting the speed, take longer recovery, do maybe 4 max of that, do a little bit of 3K work. And then when you're hitting like the harder stuff, take like 3 minutes recovery or 2.5 minutes recovery, and just try feel like relaxed at that kind of harder pace, you know, where you can stretch afterwards. And then don't, like, you'll find most people will still do well off high end thresholds with like good long strides of like 30 seconds. But you sound like you're on the ball with hills. I used to love hills as well.
Oh yeah, hills are horrible. People hate it when I give them hills.
Yeah.
But
if you want to send through that program, I'll have a look at it as well and give any opinions.
Yeah, no, I'd love to take a look at that. Well, Owen, thank you very much for coming on and talking with me. Like I said before, we could talk for another hour. We could talk about VO2 max and all that type of training, which maybe we should do, because I think people need to not only be told what workouts to do, I think it's important to know why you're doing those workouts.
Yeah, right? I would love
that. That way you can come up with workouts that suit what your goals are. If you know, why are you improving lactic threshold? What is it? What exactly is VO2 max besides the amount of oxygen that you can use? What factors affect VO2 max? These are all things that I'm working on trying to get out to people, but having an understanding of what you're trying to accomplish rather than just having somebody tell you, do this because this is what I do, and you do it, but you don't really have an understanding of. And I think those would be good things to share with people.
Dan, this was absolutely fantastic. Thank you. You're an incredible host, and I really appreciate the time.
All right. My pleasure. Have a great day. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks so much.
All right. Well, I hope you enjoyed our chat with Dr. Owen Everard. And if you enjoyed the podcast, be sure to like, subscribe, share the podcast with others. It really helps get the word out. Until next time, be sure to subscribe to the Endurance Athlete Facebook group page. Just search for the Endurance Athlete Podcast. You can also follow me on Instagram at The Endurance Athlete. All right, get out there and move. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks.